Harvey Community Radio 96.5 FM is conducting 6 by 30 minute interviews with local residents in the Harvey area. The series is called Your Stories, Our Community and focuses on women in the workforce. The volunteers that have agreed to be interviewed come from a diverse range of backgrounds and life experiences. The recorded interviews will be played on HCR 96.5 FM 3 times per week over a 6-week period and the local audio content preserved as a historical recording for future generations. HCR 96.5 FM is thankful for the financial support for the project provided by Albemarle and the Shire of Harvey. Hello, I'm Ian, your host for Your Stories, Our Community, today on Harvey Community Radio 96.5 FM. And today's series shines a spotlight on women in the workforce. I would like to introduce Sharon Apiro, a local Harvey lady who has been in the area for quite some time.
Good morning.
What is your full name and where were you born, Sharon, and what are your memories of the things you did and enjoyed when you were growing up?
My name is Sharon Apiro. I was born Sharon Hooper, that's my maiden name, and I was born in Yarloop at the Yarloop Hospital. I grew up in Yarloop for the first 10 years of my life, and then my parents bought a house in Cooknup, so I spent the next 10 years of my life there. I went to Yarloop Primary School, and some of the most fondest memories I have there is just our freedom to play and explore, and they were beautiful grounds with bush, and we were pretty uninhibited back in the 80s, so I don't think we even wore shoes much at school. we played with bare feet, and I have really happy memories of being at that school with my friends. So I completed primary school there at Yarloop Primary School and then went on to Harvey Agricultural Senior High School, where I completed year 12, and after that went off to Edith Cowan University to study teaching.
Wow, that's a good intro. A hospital in Yarloop.
Yes, and the doctor, Dr. Barrington Knight, that delivered me actually delivered my mum. So I come from my family have been in Yarloop and Wagerup for generations, so I'm a fifth generation woman from the land there in Wagerup. Yeah, my great-great-grandmother came from Ireland and they were the second settlers, Anne O'Neill, and she married an Escot. And so they resided at Willowdale Farm in Wagerup, and that was my mum's family farm where she grew up. And I spent a lot of time as a child too in the hills, playing in the creeks and swimming in creeks.
Oh, beautiful.
And just enjoying the bush too, you know, had a real connection with the land,
rocks
and land. And think it's a real privilege to have that exposure as a child to be able to connect with nature and play like that, because it's definitely something then that I understand with Indigenous Australians and their connection to the land and place, a sense of place where you grow up. I really loved that farm and really loved Yarloop, because that's where I spent a lot of my childhood.
It would have been very raw in those days too, wouldn't it?
It was a great community. We had a football club even. My dad was involved in the football club and I played netball and basketball there in Yarloop as well, growing up as a child. And caught tadpoles in the drains, did all those kind of things.
The good stuff.
All that kind of thing. And so, so I didn't realise the connection I had to Yarloop till it was lost.
When was the hospital lost?
So in the fires in 2016.
Time? Yeah. I didn't realise that because I've only been in the area for about six years. So, just after the...
It was mainly a medical centre when the fire went through. Yeah. Previous to that, my grandmother was fortunate enough with my grandfather to spend, she had Parkinson's disease, so she spent the last years of her life in that hospital. It was great that she didn't have to go far. And she had been there her whole life. So
a lot nicer to be
It
local.
Was lovely, and that she could be there with my grandfather after he had his stroke too, and they could be together and family could visit them regularly. We're very blessed with
all
that.
All very close.
Yeah.
So oh, terrific.
It was a really important community centre.
A real hub.
Yeah, it was.
As a child at school, did you have any idea of what job or occupation you wanted to do when you left school? And why was that?
I did. I loved my kindy. We didn't do kindy. It was my pre-primary teacher that I can remember and my year one teacher. I can remember all my teachers, but they were my favourites.
That's why
I became a teacher. Yeah, I just really loved that. So, Yeah, and they inspired me, I guess. So I love that sense of play and the sense of freedom that you have in early childhood. And so I love, in particular, it's my passion is early childhood and play and nature play.
And do you think there were gender stereotypes for what was expected of female occupations when you were at school? What were some examples?
Oh, definitely. Coming through was the beginning of the 90s when I finished school, and there was a big promotion then to get more women in trade areas. So, and I grew up with three brothers, so I was the only girl. So I can play cricket and really well, and I can kick a footy with both feet.
Yeah.
And grew up with the boys. So I had a great childhood playing match cars and swimming in the waterhole and cooking up. We used to swim in the channels and do all that kind of thing. So I grew up knowing no boundaries, but back then there were no women in sport like there are now, so that's come a long way.
A big change there, isn't it?
I think there was one local girl, Fleur, that played in the boys' junior team, but then she wasn't allowed to play after a certain age. But now at least we have an AFLW and we have teams and we have that coming through. The girls have more opportunity in all sports. They can play in the cricket teams if they would like as well.
It's really opened
up. It has changed a lot. So when we were considering careers in year 10, I remember going to a careers expo, getting a bumper sticker that I stuck on my door at home, my bedroom door, that said, "Hand the girl a spanner." So it was a promotion they were doing at the time all about allowing women to enter non-traditional jobs.
That's the start.
And
really,
becoming trades. So, yeah. And Alcoa were pretty proactive in that as employers locally, because back then they were, ramping up. And so they employed female apprentices and,
So they've been doing it for quite some time.
Since then that I know of. Yeah. So, and I think even more now, there is a real awareness of ensuring that even in trades and predominantly traditionally male-dominated areas, that there is that equality and opportunity for women to participate. And that's come about now with advances in technology. I remember at one stage, I really liked Kenworth trucks, and there was a boy on my bus travelling to school all the time, and he used to buy truck magazines. So he gave me a poster once, and I remember saying, I'd like to be a truck driver when I grow up. And he said, "Can't drive trucks because you can't change the tyres."
But
which is probably at the time true.
Yeah.
But now with the technology is so different. They have pneumatic this and lifts and things like that. And there's
the
help available. So a woman would be able to, because of technology assisting them, any strength or disadvantage they may have physically in a job can be worked around now.
That's right. It's a real turnaround, really, isn't it?
It has come a long way.
And going back to that sticky you got, that's so very apt that hand the woman a spanner.
Yes,
yeah.
I know. So even though I went probably into a traditional role of teaching because it was my personal preference, I didn't consider myself as being limited. I knew growing up probably I competed with the boys, so I was quite prepared to do anything they did.
Yeah, true. And you would have had three boys spoiling you as well, wouldn't you?
Yeah, they stuck up for me when I needed them. But otherwise, I was pretty good at fighting. I used to, if they wanted to have a bit of a fisticuff, because that's how boys sort things out.
Oh, that's right.
They used to say, "Oh, come on, Sharon," and I'd say, "As long as you don't tell Mum."
Yeah, oh, of course. Oh, that's great. What was your first job when you left school, and what are your recollections of that time for you in the workforce?
Yeah, so after I finished year 12, I got a job at the local vegetable shop. It was back then. Well, it was River Rooster, actually. It was in the back of Panetta's.
Oh, okay.
Shop.
River Rooster.
Yeah, River Rooster it was called. So I had a fast food position there for a while, and then I got promoted to move to the front counter and work there. So I knew and got to know a lot of people, and still to this day, when I chat to people, they say, "Oh, I remember you at your Panetta's," because it was in the days before the supermarkets were open after hours. So the supermarket shut at 5:30.
Yes.
And so this was a deli that provided everything like dummies, nappies, et cetera, for parents that would run out during the night and that type of thing. Plus it was where people come to get a meal or their cigarettes as well. So I knew all the smokers in town.
One of those real general stores with
everything.
It was
a real deli type.
A deli.
It was a vegetable shop, but it had a lot of deli lines and it had the fast food place in the back. So that's where I worked. That was my first job. After that, I also worked at the Cookin' Up store. And the best job was at the Harvey Tourist and Interpretive Centre. I worked there on weekends, every second weekend, while I was in my last year at uni.
That was over to the Stirling Cottage there.
Yes. So I worked there and it was a great job because you just got to chat to people that would come in, share your knowledge about the local area,
yes,
tell them where to go, what to do, and then vacuum the floor at the end of the day. So that was pretty easy.
And that's sort of a bright, inspiring sort of a job that in that sort of tourism sector, isn't it?
Yeah, it was great. Yeah, and then I, of course, became a teacher, and then my first job was here in Harvey, and I was really looking forward to moving out of home and moving away
and got my first position
here in Harvey.
Well, that was my next question, actually. You had described some of the different jobs and occupations you've had during your working career so far, and which ones have the best memories for you, and I think you're just about to touch on that.
Yeah, so I worked at St. Anne's, and during that time there, I was fortunate enough, I had a boss that recognised my leadership abilities, I guess. So by the time it was my fifth year of teaching, I became an assistant principal. So I ended up in admin, and that was a huge responsibility, but something that I really thrived on and enjoyed. So did that for 3 years before then I realised I would like to broaden my horizons and work in a bigger school. So I moved to Mandurah and started teaching a double stream school. So I was very much headed on a principal pathway professionally. That was where I was headed. So I started doing a master's degree. I had done an undergraduate and a postgraduate. And because originally when I first did my undergraduate, it was only 3 years teaching degree, and we could teach from K to 10. Then as I kept teaching it, you had to keep updating. And that's something with education. Even now, you are learning how to teach all the time because the dynamic of the children coming through are very different.
Yeah, so it's continually evolving.
So you're always learning. So what was interesting back when I was in admin, it was very much a male dominated. It was a real boys club.
Yes, I can only imagine.
Tend that in education, a lot of males get the promotions.
That's right. Yeah.
So to be a female promoted was quite exciting.
A big deal.
Yeah. So I started my master's and then taught in a couple of different schools in the Mandurah Peel area. Then got pregnant with my first child. But that then changed everything because I had considered it that I only took maternity leave and was going to come back because I was on that professional pathway of, yes, I'm going to be a principal, and that's where I was headed. And then Annie, my first daughter, arrived 6 weeks early, 6 weeks pregnant.
Okay.
So she was a real surprise. So, and there were a few complications and things like that. So that completely changed my priorities professionally. I think that's something that women are affronted with mother compared to when males face fatherhood. It really is very different. And so as much as I had that professional ambition, it totally changed when Annie was born and we were in hospital for 22 days. We came home 22 days. And then she had to see, we were outpatients at Princess Margaret. She had a clicky hip. And every time we went to the paediatrician, they seemed to find something wrong. Some pieces for those.
So that changed the whole dynamic.
It did. I went to my boss and I said, look, and he was very, very good. And he said, look, we don't want to lose you. Let me hold your job. So I did take maternity leave. And I just said, yeah, but I felt as a woman and as a mother, my first priority was to that child. And I think when you become a mother, they're a part of you and your sense of self is reevaluated.
I can only imagine. I'm not a woman, of course, but I can only imagine.
So you feel a great sense of responsibility for that child and then children. I had another two children after that. That you just, and I guess too, my mum, who I really mostly admire, and my grandmother would be my hero. They were women that just, a mum especially in all of us, promoted the work ethic. Whatever you do really well in life. She said it didn't matter whether you were going to become the street sweeper or you're going to go and be a lawyer. Whatever you just do really well. Even I considered that with motherhood too. I actually stopped teaching and while I had my children. And the best thing about teaching is that I was able to do a lot of relief teaching And I did finish my master's. So I finished a master's degree while I was home being a mum as well. So I did that. And so it's kind of kept me in the loop with research and the current happenings and things that were happening with the children. So, and then have eventually, as my children attended school, got more back involved in schools and have ended up teaching back in Harvey.
Yeah, so it kept you in good stead.
It did.
During that learning process through the childhood business and or having kids, I should say. And
And the learning continues, like with the particularly in the area of education, there have been so many advancements in brain research, and you know we teach.
I was going to say ways to teach.
So less, it used to be of the opinion what we were teaching the children. Now it's how we are helping them to know how to learn. The amount of information that was back in the 90s to impart to children was minimal compared to now, the amount of information that is out there that they have to deal with and discern every day on the World Wide Web. They live in an international community. So, and interesting enough, the developments in education are continuing in that way, in that globalisation. We're seeing the effects of that even rippling through to now an international curriculum. Things like that. So it's fascinating being part of 3 decades of teaching, seeing the differences, and it's fantastic at the moment, just that we are so informed about how children's brains work, and our practice then reflects that. So it's very research-informed now, research-based and evidence-based, and then it allows us to have best practice.
Yes, and keeping up with the trends of the modern times. Moving forward, so to speak.
Very different. And I think it's like that in every workplace. People now look for employees that have common sense, problem solving, communication skills are very, very
important.
That's
a huge one. Yeah.
So that's something that we're promoting and educating children for, that workplace. And that's in all areas. Even if you're doing a trade, you have to be able to communicate with someone. You have to be able to problem solve. You have to work with others.
Work with others,
cooperate,
yeah.
Have initiative. It's a very interesting space.
It is, isn't it? And it's changed so much over the years.
It has changed so much from just learn this to now you have to learn how to learn.
Mm.
When you're thrown in a job with new technology and new advancements, you know how to learn it and how to do that job because you know how to learn.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
I didn't realise it had evolved that much. So
huge in the last 30 years.
It is. Now, Sharon, I'm going to ask you, we're going to have a song. Just to break up the interview a little bit and let people go and grab a cup of tea. What song have you chosen?
I chose Christina New, My Island Home.
Oh, it's one of my favourites.
Yeah, that's a real 90s gem. And she's a similar age to me and someone that I really admire because she's probably the first real Indigenous artist that made it in my generation. Yeah, an Australian artist that really made an impact worldwide.
It certainly did.
Her music is fantastic.
And what a song it is too.
Yeah, it is.
This is the song chosen by Sharon, Christina New with My Island Home. And that was Christine Arnoux with My Island Home. Thank you for that, Sharon. Lovely song. My name is Ian. I'm speaking to Sharon Apiro about Women in the Workforce, a part of our Your Stories, Our Community series. Very lucky to have Sharon with us here today. Okay, Sharon, continuing on, from your experience as a woman in the workforce, what are some of the challenges you have faced and how have you been able to resolve them?
Predominantly in education, as I said before, it had in administration of education had been a male-dominated area, but now it's no longer that. It's pretty very equal now. So a challenge may have been in the past being able to get promotions and move up in the education system. Now those kind of things have been hurdles have been taken away and it's very much an even playing field. Now the best person for the job gets the job, which is great. Still a lot of disparity in any workplace with pay. So are women in
That's the ongoing issue,
pay.
Isn't it?
In definitely. A lot of industries. I mean, my husband was a tradesman and then he ended up being a general manager. So his wage, so he got paid all through his apprenticeship and then paid his whole, any promotions or anything, he got paid more and more and more. His wage when we were both, I stopped and had children, his wage was double mine compared to I had paid for my university, paid for my degree, paid for promotional degrees, paid for any other education. And then was at the top of my pay scale and it was nowhere near what he got.
Didn't even get close.
No. And I think it's even in education now, very much so, because we have salaries and it's very regulated. That's a very regulated industry. But there's a lot of industries, particularly, I guess, in the mining industry.
Yes.
Where they're still working to be, and especially in management of mining areas, it's a predominantly male-dominated area and trades and workplaces. I was lucky enough after the Alec fires, Cozzy's workshop where he worked, Cozzy is my husband, relocated to Fremantle. And during that relocation, they were buying machines off a company and buying tools and things. And he got a promotional tour to Sandviken in Sweden. And it coincided with our 25th wedding anniversary.
Oh, so that was good timing.
It was good. So I said to him, can I come too? And that company, were more than happy to take me too. So I was included in everything and it was fascinating because on that tour, which was a Pacific region tour of Sandviken in Sweden, so there were representatives from all the – I was the only female other female that worked for the actual company. The tour in Sweden, the tour guides, the ladies that worked for that company were female and they talked about how in that industry there is just the lack of women and that's something that they had been working within the company to promote. So there's still that inequality of in scientifically advanced fields even, getting enough women to be able to get into those positions into those fields and be able to stay there.
So it's very much still alive.
Yes. So, but I guess one great thing that I think now a challenge that's been addressed is being able to return to the workplace after you've had children. So, or while you're having children. So that's something that has really changed.
It has a big plus,
in the last 20, 30 years as well. Yeah. It's great now that there are facilities. I mean, there are facilities now in town for people who don't have family to mind their children, but they can be minded at daycare. And it means women can return to the workplace without losing their position within the workplace. So they're able to go back into their profession and work in it, whether it's in a part-time capacity or whether it's back in full-time, without losing, you know, their job and where they were up to before they stopped to be a parent.
It's a lot fairer equation now, isn't it?
Much better. And there's just a lot.
That was a big step forward.
Yeah, a lot more support out there for women now to return to work and a lot more. And I think we are kinder to each other as well now. We often will support one another more in being able to go back to work and, you know, there's people picking up other people's kids and, and all that type of thing.
Like it's, a little bit of teamwork.
It's more, a lot more common now for people to be able to return back to work, than previously. You would have had to start again or find a different job or one that was part-time. Now they'll actually adjust positions in some workplaces so it becomes a part-time position or let you job share.
To make it work.
Yeah, there's a lot more
allowance job sharing for job sharing. And it's one of the best things
that
ever came along, really, isn't it?
So, one challenge would be, that really has been changed and overcome is that expectation that you can still do a really good job even if you're a mum and a parent, so you can return to your workplace.
You don't lose out.
And you have just as much to offer.
Yeah, you don't lose out on what you've learned.
Before you became a mother or became a parent.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
What are some of the practical things that would have assisted you with the challenges you faced in the workplace at that time?
Yeah, I was lucky enough when I had my children to be able to pick up relief and keep my hand in the door and finish my master's and do all that because I had family support local. So I had both my parents and Cozzy's parents. We grew up with our grandparents, so we actually moved back here after living away to be near my parents to have our children so they could be part of their lives and was fortunate enough that they then enjoyed their grandparent time looking after the kids while I worked, and that was fantastic. So
very handy to have them close by as well.
And it's really great that though if you don't have that family, that there are the childcare facilities and things now that allow people to be able to have their children minded so they can return to work. Mm. Yeah, definitely.
Do you believe recognition and promotion is generally harder for women in the workforce? And if so, why? I know you've already touched on some of this.
Yeah.
Anything else to add to that one?
Only that I think sometimes women are quite exhausted from doing everything. And like I said, grow up with the ethic of you want to do something and do it really well. Being a mum really as to the best of your ability, which is not easy. And then you're doing your job to the best of the ability. And you're being a wife to the best of your ability. There's not a lot of room anywhere else for like resting and recuperation
and recovering.
So we get really worn out.
That's another whole story within itself.
It is. Yeah. And so I guess a common perception is, well, you know, women are always tired, but it's probably because we're juggling five balls in the air.
Yeah.
At a time. So that would just be a misconception, I think, because we're really doing a great job, even though we are so tired, we're still doing it and doing it well. And I guess that misconception, I think, holds, whereas a male can be seen as being more dedicated. And hence then they're promoted, I think, above women for that reason. Not on a skill level or not because of qualifications or not because of anything else, I think it's purely, that they're more available. Yeah.
Good answer. Who are or have been some of your female role models in the workplace and what is it you admire most about them?
I mentioned my mum before and she definitely has been an inspiration to me and my grandmother, my grandmother wasn't a teacher or anything, but she worked on the farm. And she was still milking a cow by hand up into her 80s. So amazing lady. But just by being who she was, I just really admire who she was and that person.
That's wonderful to have a role model like that from such a young age for you.
Very definitely. And then Mary MacKillop, so St. Mary MacKillop of the Cross.
Yes.
So my auntie Pauline is a member of her congregation. She's a sister of St. Joseph. So our family has had a connection with her order. And I was very lucky enough when Mary MacKillop was beatified by the Pope back in, 93, I think it would have been.
It was early 90s.
94, maybe 95. I actually flew to Sydney with Auntie Pauline in a group and I was there when the Pope beatified Mary MacKillop. So that was an amazing.
Wow,
and
went
and
experience.
Visited
yeah.
her grave there in North Sydney. So like I said, because of the family connection, but I guess also, and my Auntie Pauline was a teacher as well, I guess we have drawn inspiration from her because she was a stickler for justice and fair education for all. it's something that she really fought for and believed in, and super woman, a lady, you know, woman.
That sounds
role
like
model because she fought against a very patriarchal structure in the church that really still exists today. She fought against that to be able in, to be in charge of her own order. And
good on her for, for taking up the challenge.
Because what she believed in was that free education that and for all. And that's what she wanted to promote and bring to the bush children in the outback of Australia. It wasn't promoted necessarily by, like I said, the hierarchy of the church. So she came up against them and took it to Rome. And in the end, she won out. So she's a real power.
She's a go-getter.
Power lady, you know. She's very much. And that was in the very early stages of Australian history, so of European settlement.
Which would have been
Australian
a huge
history.
Thing in those days, those early times.
Huge for a woman to be taking that amount of responsibility and leadership. So very much an inspiration to me.
I can understand why. And what is likely to be different now for a young female leaving school and entering the workforce for the first time from when you did?
So I've got three girls and the eldest has just finished year 12 and watching her now, they're not limited. There are so many choices. There are probably too many choices now career-wise that they really, and I think I've promoted in them, that you can do whatever you want, but you need to also be doing something you love. So don't be doing something for the sake of it's that, the best paid job.
That's a huge part of the equation. I'm glad you're
really
following the map because that's so important.
Yeah, you have to be passionate about what you're doing and enjoy going to work every day. And so I guess like their dad farms and he's doing what he loves every day and I teach and I do what I love every day. So I'm hoping that that then will inspire them to do things that they enjoy.
Yes, and
primarily.
It makes a difference through your entire life as well.
Yes,
it makes
if
a difference.
You enjoy going
you're
to
doing
work.
What you want to do.
Yeah.
And
it's not work then.
Yeah, well, that's right. So many people don't enjoy what they do.
You spend a lot of time, a lot of hours at work.
And do you believe things are changing for the better for women in the workforce? And are you optimistic that things will continue to improve in the future?
Yes, definitely. I mean, we still have a very patriarchal society, I guess. I was discussing before with someone about my girls are all into F1, the Formula One, and following that. And that's a very male-dominated sport. Even though women drive cars, it's just not promoted. So economically it makes a difference where the support and sponsorship of things are, and it's still very much a male-dominated area and industry. So a lot of male-dominated, economically male-dominated things still get promoted. But that is changing, like I said before. Workplaces are making a priority to include a certain amount of women in their staff.
They are.
Because of the depth of different perspectives that women will bring to to a workplace. So it's fantastic to see that recognised, and I think that will continue to develop and continue to grow in every industry, that the recognition and value of women.
It's great that it is changing.
Definitely.
It's taken some time, but I feel it's slowly getting there.
Slowly. Yeah.
Well, that's been very enjoyable talking to you, Sharon, and thank you so much for coming in and being interviewed for Women in the Workforce, part
it's
of our
pleasure.
Your Stories, Our Community on Harvey Community Radio 96.5 FM. It's been most enjoyable and we really do appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
A pleasure. And we need a song, an outro song, Sharon.
Yes.
What have you got for us?
Paul Callies from Little Things, Big Things Grow. I love the lyrics in that it's actually a Bible verse. So, and as a Christian, that's very close to my heart. And it's very resonating in the sense that women have little bits of impact, but that has a lot of impact in the future. So, really women are in growing our children are in charge of the future generations. So we have a great responsibility for what just seems like a little drop can have ripples throughout generations to come. So I think that's fantastic to recognise.
Nicely spoken. And here's Paul Kelly with From Little Things, Big Things Grow.
gather round people, I'll tell you a story, an 8-year long story of power and pride. British Lord Vesty and Vincent Lingyari were opposite men on opposite sides. Vesty was fat with money and muscle, beef was his business, broad was his door. Vincent was lean and spoke very little, he had no bank balance, hard dirt was his floor. From little things, big things grow. From little things, big things grow. The Rinji were working for nothing but rations, but once they had gathered the wealth of the land, daily the pressure got tighter and tighter. The Rinji decided they must make a stand. They picked up their swags and started off walking. At what a creep, they sat themselves down. Now it don't sound like much, but it sure got tongues talking. Back at the homestead and then in the town. From little things, big things grow. From little things, big things grow. A vesting man said, I'll double your wages, 18 quid a week you'll have in your hand. Vincent said, we're not talking about wages, we're sitting right here till we get our land. Vesty man roared, Vesty man thundered, you don't stand a chance of a cinder and snow. Vince said, if we fall, others are rising. From little things, big things grow. From little things, big things grow. Then Vincent Lingyari boarded an airplane, landed in Sydney, big city of lights. And daily he went round softly speaking his story to all kinds of men from all walks of life. And Vincent sat down with big politicians. This affair, they told him, it's a matter of state. Let us sort it out while your people are hungry. Vincent said, no thanks, we know how to wait. From little things, big things grow. From little things, big things grow. Then Vincent Lingyari returned in an airplane back to his country once more to sit down. And he told his people, let the stars keep on turning. We have friends in the south, in the cities and towns. Eight years went by, eight long years of waiting, till one day a tall stranger appeared in the land. And he came with lawyers, and he came with great ceremony, and through Vincent's fingers poured a handful of sand. From little things, big things grow. From little things, big things grow. Well, that was the story of Vincent Lingyari. But this is the story of something much more. How power and privilege can unmove a people who know where they stand. Stand in the law. From little things, big things grow. From little things, big things grow. From Little things, big things grow 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 from